Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Good morning, folks. January 7th. Hope you are having a wonderful day thus far. It's a little chilly out there, which was another nice, fresh, and crisp morning. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Brandy Bynum, Acting Unit Chief, Center for Countering Human Trafficking with the Department of Homeland Security, will join us to talk about the Blue Campaign Day that is held every January 11th every year, hashtag Wear Blue Day. Every year, millions of men, women, and children internationally are forced and coerced into human trafficking, which includes both forced labor and sex trafficking. We'll talk about the challenges at the border, what that's created for us here relative to human trafficking and how bad this situation is. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, will join us to talk about the Saints' last game. I don't know about you, I was very proud of the effort that was put forward. They had another game where a couple of things didn't go their way. The opposing team's quarterback played a hell of a game, but it was a very, I thought it was a fun game to watch. And I really, again, was very proud of the effort that the New Orleans Saints made on Sunday. And we'll talk about Jeff Nowak with that. Obviously, we're searching for a new head coach and prepping for the draft. JP Morrell joins us at 11:30, New Orleans City Council member at large. We'll talk about updates relative to the investigation of this terrorist act that took place on Bourbon Street, and we'll find out what his thoughts are about it. And we'll visit with NOLA Coalition in our NOLA Coalition segment. Brian Lagarde, he's the executive director of Project NOLA. Those are the folks that are managing the cameras down in the French Quarter, and we'll talk to him about his thoughts about what he saw on that day. Darren Bakes, CEI, Energy Policy Expert, Competitive Enterprise Institute, that is, about President Biden's newly announced ban on new drilling. You know, we heard a lot but from Democrats about how they were pro-fracking, they were pro-drilling, they were pro-this, pro-that. As they're walking out the door, they're making it more and more difficult for one of the cornerstones of President-elect Trump's platform. Drill, baby, drill. Why is that? Are we really looking out for the best interests of the country or not? And have we not come to a resolution on that issue? It seems as though we did during the campaign. At least that's what Democrats were saying. But actions speak louder than words. So where does this end up for us as it relates to the fossil fuel industry? And what's the reaction of those in the oil industry? We'll talk to Darren about that at 10:30. There was an article in NOLA.com, very well done, that kind of laid out why certain things happen on New Year's Day that in the early morning hours. Jeff Adelson is the reporter. And talking to members of the NOPD, and many of you just heard the conversation with Colin Arnold, who's the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness. And I'm glad that Colin finally came forward, and as Tommy pointed out, it may have been his first public comments about this. And what we learned today was simply that we do have a plan. There is a plan that's out there. Well, that's good news, because that's step one. What we didn't hear is where the breakdown was in the execution of that plan. And we know that there are certain security measures that are in place in order to minimize risk in the French Quarter. This goes back many, many years ago, where they decided that this was a task that they were going to undertake. What we heard was a lot of problems with deploying the bollards, some that are on a track and the track gets dirty and they tried to do alternative measures in order to get those operational. And it just became a very burdensome and difficult situation to deal with, Colin Arnold's words. So the alternative or the solution was to simply abandon the deployment. This is what I've been talking about since the very beginning. It's really not about the bollards. It's about remediation, maintenance of, and commitment to deploying security measures pursuant to the plan, none of which are easy. These are difficult things. They take time. They take human capital. They take preparation. It takes preventive maintenance. It takes all of these things to make sure that you have the assets and resources ready to be called upon when you desire to execute a security plan. We seem to continue to miss the point, because we've been hearing the mayor every day talking about a tactical expert to come down here and review plans. Great. Wonderful. Who's going to review the execution? Who's going to decide whether or not we are going to allocate the resources necessary to execute the plan? The bollards are clumsy. They're heavy. They're designed that way for a very simple reason. This is pretty simple in identifying the problem and the solution. What's not simple is the execution, because it requires a lot of attention to detail. Knowing when you're going to call for whatever level that you want to call for as it relates to any number of festivals, fairs, this, that. And in New Orleans, there are a lot. I don't envy them, because each and every one of these events present different challenges. But it's not, you can't have an excuse for not executing. Once you decide to do so, once you create a public expectation that certain things are going to get done, when you fail to do so and there is an event and someone gets hurt, you get tattooed. Plain and simple. That's how it works. There's no way around it. And the sooner that we come to that realization, much like I said yesterday, the realization is that, you know, Islamic jihadism is alive and well and continues, and you may not care about terrorism, but terrorists care about you. Woulda, coulda, shoulda is not going to get it. And if that equipment fails on that day and that bollard can't slide across that track and there can't be a remediation to it in a short period of time in order to do so, to get it up and running, there has to be an alternative to that plan that provides a similar level of protection and coverage using alternative measures. That's what good plans have. But again, it requires execution. It requires human capital resources. It requires all of that. And the city knows this because they've actually used it as an excuse before. I've recently learned that the bollards are gates, kind of for lack of a better term, that are used on Royal Street. It's this kind of metal decorative fencing that slips into a sleeve in the street. It's kind of a 12-inch pipe thing that sleeves. You can, you know, a couple people can carry it relatively easy. It's for the same reason to create these pedestrian malls. Doesn't provide the level of security that any of these bollards provide, as deployed on previously on Bourbon Street, but an impediment none the same. When people were asked with the city as to why they're not being deployed, the response was they didn't have the manpower to do so. Well, here we go again. What do you mean? Then why do we have them? Who decides that we just abandon the utilization of these barriers because we don't have the human capital in order to deploy? And what else that I found out is that museum employees for the State Museum down there, the Presbyterian, and other museums on Royal Street, they're the ones that have ended up deploying these barricade-type fences on Royal Street. This is emblematic, right, of not understanding the threat, not understanding the problem, not understanding that you have to execute. Plain and simple. No excuses. We have others that understand it and are willing to step up and do so. I hope that someone, somewhere, somehow, and look, I like these people. Colin has been great. I think he's been a very competent employee for the city. I don't know where the breakdown is. Colin Arnold, that is Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness. I don't know where it is. But there is a lack of effort. There is no doubt about that. And we shouldn't let anybody get away with saying, no, the effort's there. No, it's not. It's not there. Because if it was, we wouldn't be facing what we're facing today as it relates to that issue and the manner in which it occurred. Plain and simple. It doesn't mean that we can't, that we can protect all streets. We cannot. We minimize risk, we'll never eliminate it, and we'll never be in enough places even to minimize risk throughout the city. Impossible. I get it. But where we choose to engage in it, we have to take it seriously. Because it does send a message. It does send a message as to where our culture is as it relates to the safety and security of the pedestrians with inside the French Quarter. And I said this before, once we decide to be there, we need to be there. Plain and simple, relative to those security measures. No excuses. We don't want to hear about beads. We don't want to hear about other garbage getting caught up in tracks. Then you develop an alternative measure to go in there with a portable industrial-style vacuum to pull all of that crap out. Not too differently than the drains that we have in our sewers, in our drainage system, right? There's a problem. You deal with it. If you are serious about what you're doing. Sometimes I believe we believe our own press. We've been very lucky. We do a good job. There's no doubt about that. But we've been lucky, and we've been fortunate. And unfortunately, I think it takes an event like this to stare ourselves in the mirror critically and gain a better understanding of where our failures are. Right now, our failure is execution. I'm waiting for someone to step to the mic and say it just like that. We failed in executing a plan that we all know exists. And a new plan is of no value unless we understand what it's going to take to execute plans in general. Do we really believe that this tactical expert is going to come down and release us of some of the requirements of the existing security plan? If we do, we're crazy. It's going to be more onerous. It's going to require more human capital. It's going to require more man hours. It's going to require a whole bunch more to get done. If we can't do it now, how are we going to do it then? We will get egg on our face again. It will happen. Someone needs to stand up at the mic and say it. Clear as a bell. And not that we're gonna look, we're gonna take care of this, we're gonna. That's what they said in the aftermath of the report in 2019. And I think a similar report in 2017. It's gotta happen every day. Every hour of every day. And every single time that there's a deployment of a security measure, a bollard or otherwise, there should be a log, there should be a memorialization of who's handling it, there should be an observation and a memorialization if something is not working in order to get it repaired. So that when things happen and we're wondering why things were not done, we can understand exactly why. We go to the log. We know who was responsible. We know who did not do their job that day. We know who did not send it up the line in order to get resolved. And we know who did not call for alternative measures to be put in place because the first line security measure failed. It's not rocket science. Somebody has to be held accountable. Somebody has to be responsible for this if we want to be serious about it. This pointing of fingers are not even pointing fingers at anybody else and just the hopes of nobody asking these probative questions and demanding an answer. Because we didn't hear one this morning. We heard that there was a breakdown, and obviously it didn't get executed, but there is a plan. There's a primary and a secondary coverage plan that was talked about, but I'm curious how much of that was actually even put into place. Well, we know the major portion of the primary, the frontline part of the plan, didn't happen. I can't imagine the secondary happened if the primary didn't. And there was an understanding that these plans are executed on for certain events during the year. What does that mean? An understanding. That doesn't sound very definitive to me, right? I would much rather hear there is a mandate that this is going to happen. On this day, this function, at this time, for these hours, clear as a bell, these are the expectations, let's go execute. And maybe these investigations will get to the bottom of this. I don't know. I certainly hope the mayor doesn't stand in the way of if the council's going to have their investigation or stand in the way of the AG's investigation, because that's where the rubber meets the road. It's the only way that we are going to remediate what has actually happened moving forward, understanding the breakdowns, understanding the commitment, and whether or not we are willing to set aside the assets and resources in order to execute whatever security plan has to be put in place. And stop BSing the public. We'll be right back.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Welcome back, folks. President Biden, newly announced ban on new drilling and further oil and gas development on millions of acres of U.S. coastal and offshore waters. He announced yesterday, again, standing in the way of one of the cornerstones of President-elect Donald Trump. Here to talk to us about Darren Bakes with Competitive Enterprise Institute energy policy expert. Darren, welcome to the show.
That's great to be here. Thank you.
This completely mystifies me. You know, I thought that we had come together during the election. People were, both sides were in favor of fracking. Both sides were in favor of drilling. They bragged about how they increased the number of drilling permits and drilling production that was done in this country. And then on the way out, words, you know, actions speak louder than words. Their true colors come shining through.
Yeah, it seems kind of fitting. I mean, on President Biden's first day of office, he blocked the Keystone pipeline, and now is basically blocking over 625 million acres of the U.S. ocean from offshore drilling. So you won't be able to have future oil and natural gas leases. And the problem is that the action, first of all, it's kind of a unilateral action, and it's also indefinite. So until something is done, it's going to just kind of keep going. So then the question is, how do you go about fixing this? And there might be some ways. I mean, Congress certainly could pass legislation. President Trump might be able to reverse the Biden action, although there are some questions regarding that as well.
So all of a sudden, I guess there was divine intervention or something came to the, you know, the top of his mind that the seashore is something that is concerning enough to do this? I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, believe in coincidences. The timing is just really interesting. He's on his way out. He's not going to have to suffer anything politically. I guess they figure in 4 years, people will forget about that he engaged in this ignorant executive action. I mean, how else can you explain
it? Yeah, I mean, this is his going away present, I guess, to the American people to, I mean, what it's going to do is it's going to limit the supply of oil and natural gas. It's going to drive up prices down the line. And, you know, a lot of focus will be on the fact that it'll drive up prices in the future. But the reality is when the government takes actions like this, this is a signal to the market. And it can have an effect on prices even now. I don't know, you know, I can't go into his head and know why he's doing it, except this is certainly an inappropriate action. It's kind of consistent with what he has done throughout his presidency, which is to restrict access to kind of oil and gas. And he's taking this sweeping action that's going to hurt Americans, especially if you're talking about driving up energy prices. It's going to hurt American families and low cost and low income Americans the most, who will just suffer through higher energy prices. You know, we've all suffered through higher prices across the board with Biden, and it's actions like this that play a part in why we are suffering through higher prices.
Well, when you take this action coupled with the most recent action by the Department of Energy relative to natural gas heaters, hot water heaters, right? Water heaters for homes. They've passed these new efficiency standards that are going to basically about 40% of new tankless water heaters will be off the market by 2029 in just 4 years. And at the average cost for the consumer to purchase new water heaters is going to be about $450 more on average than it is today.
Yeah,
I mean, natural gas water heaters is one of the most efficient systems that we have for our homes. I have gas water heaters in my home. I would never, if I had electric, my electric bill would be off the rails. And, you know, and what I pay in gas is nothing.
Yeah, these appliance regulations kind of assume that consumers are stupid. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, this is just an idea that they think that the consumer will not be able to figure out whether or not there are any savings. And therefore, we need to, government should just impose these requirements and hope that the savings will be achieved over the life, once you've owned the appliance. Of course, a lot of the savings are never realized, and consumers can make choices on their own. They don't need the government to tell them what kind of things to buy. There's a lot of reasons why you buy a certain appliance, including the quality of the appliance, and of course the cost. I mean, the one thing I would stress is that this effort, this attack on energy, is multi-pronged. It's not, it's restricting, you've got restricting kind of oil and natural gas. You've got trying to limit the ability to have natural gas hookups in buildings, changing building codes by the government. It's trying to restrict or limit appliances that use natural gas. It's, you know, you can just kind of go down the list. It's regulations that will limit the ability to produce electricity through reliable sources of electricity, like natural gas and coal. It's just kind of a multi-pronged attack, and this is just one piece of it, this latest ban and on offshore drilling. And also, what you're talking about, appliance regulations, is another key component of this effort.
Yeah, I mean, first it was gas stoves, now it's gas water heaters. I mean, you know,
they're hitting everything. appliance you can think of, they're pretty much hitting.
I mean, what's left and what's next? I mean, you know, they're attacking exploration, they're attacking production, and they're attacking the consumer side, consumption.
Also thinking about cars. You know, they're attacking cars. And that's awesome. I mean, so President Trump has got, or President-elect Trump, but he'll be president soon, and the Trump administration has a lot of things to undo. There's a lot of these policies have been adopted or regulations have been finalized. So there's going to be efforts to try to get rid of those regulations. There are things that Congress needs to do. So unfortunately, I think a big part of, and then you got the whole Inflation Reduction Act, which spends billions or probably trillions of dollars on pushing this Green New Deal, which includes policies like pushing certain appliances or trying to get people away from the use of natural gas. So you have to get rid of these Inflation Reduction Act subsidies. So you have to get rid of regulations. It's everything, subsidies, taxes, regulations. And it's all this kind of central plan to try to shift country away from the use of fossil fuels and kind of reliable energy sources. And you have to undo it. And then we can start moving forward, I'd say, to try to push for really genuine kind of freedom for energy consumers and for energy producers.
Darren, correct me if I'm wrong. In the waning days of the Biden administration, Obama administration, some similar actions were taken under the authority given to the president of the 1953 Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. That went to court. Trump tried to push back. Then President Trump tried to push back on those EAs and failed. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's kind of so in this current situation, Biden is using, as you said, the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act to try to withdraw this area. And Obama did something like it as well. Trump tried to limit what Obama did. And a district court in Alaska said he wasn't allowed to. I won't get into all the details. It's kind of confusing anyway. But I will say the Ninth Circuit vacated that decision. Because it was a moot. So there's kind of some thought that there's some legal questions regarding whether or not President Trump can undo what Biden has done this latest round. But, you know, even though there's some legal questions, it does appear that there's a decent chance he could. And it shouldn't be assumed that he can't do something on his own. In fact, President George W. Bush actually withdrew, actually reversed what his father did in terms of limiting offshore drilling. And nothing was challenged in that regard. So I think it's a very, it's a live legal issue. So it's very possible that President Trump could, in fact, try to undo what Biden did. And then it would just have to be litigated and see what happens. But hopefully Congress would try to take action. And maybe they can use the reconciliation process to pass legislation to undo, to help undo the harm from Biden's actions. The reconciliation process is desirable because it's a way to pass legislation without dealing with a filibuster. So I would imagine Congress will try to go after this Biden action right away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously these are revenue streams for the federal government. If we're thinking about trying to balance our budget or pay off some of our debt or finance future military spending because we have antiquated assets in our Department of Defense, I mean, this is like the proverbial cutting off your nose to spite your face, right?
Yeah, and, you know, so, I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's probably ideal for reconciliation. It's definitely a revenue measure, you know, it's a way to generate royalties and get money as well, which is something, there are certain rules for reconciliation, and then, so this should fit perfectly fine. I mean, I think the problem with what Biden did mostly is that, one, it's unilateral, but it's just so sweeping, you know, it's just such a huge, it's pretty much everything. You know, it's not, yeah. It's not this narrow area that he's trying to block off from drilling. He's trying to block pretty much across the board. And, you know, that's ultimately going to hurt America's now and kind of in the future. And it's going to take, just going to make it more difficult and also disrespects, I think, the electorate, which I think, as you said at the start of the interview, I mean, I think it was pretty clear that the American people want to be able to unleash American energy. They don't want to hinder American energy and tie our hands and make it more difficult and make us have to rely on other governments, foreign governments, maybe on friendly countries when it comes to oil and natural gas. But Biden didn't care, and that's a problem. He got this lame duck president, and that's what he did, and now we're going to have to figure out a way to undo this damage.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, that's a lot of authority that within the executive department, and it seems to run contrary to this whole balance of power notion in our constitutional republic, that an outgoing lame duck president can take or issue executive orders or take executive action that is permanent in nature. You know, I know it's unresolved right now, but could be permanent in nature. That's a lot of authority.
It is. I think that Congress is going to have to go clarify that or Continental Shelf Lands Act, and just they're going to have to amend it. It's just too sweeping of authority.
I think lame duck presidents' hands ought to be tied further, except in the case of national security. I mean, you know, to go get off in all these ideological warfares and be able to issue these orders, you know, that have some permanency to them is absolutely ridiculous. You know, things that they would never do in the midst of running for reelection, but they'll just do it now because they can. And there's you don't have any accountability and you can't, it's not going to hurt them. So, well, I'll just do it. It doesn't matter. I got a pension. I'm riding off into the sunset. Nobody likes me much anyway. So what am I going to lose?
Yeah. It's been a long-standing problem. You know, you probably heard the term midnight regulations.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this is. I mean, it's definitely not a regulation, but it's the same concept. You know,
sure.
The outgoing president just kind of does everything right at the end. And, yes, it disrespects, I think, the system. I think it's kind of – and I think Congress has got to figure out a way to really address these midnight regulations, but also these actions by the – that are not – that the president himself can take. That,
yeah.
Quite honestly, Congress authorized the president to have such power. I don't know that the president actually has this power. If it's that clear whether or not it's this much power to necessarily to go this crazy with how much he withdrew from.
No doubt of that is something
drilling,
that we need to resolve for sure, right? and quit it, for sure.
So there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. Darren, I got to get to a break. I got to get to a break. I apologize. But thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time and your insight. Darren Bakes, Competitive Enterprise Institute, Energy Policy Expert. It was a tongue twister. Have a great week. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. I had the opportunity to watch the Memorial Mass last evening. It was very touching. It was incredibly appropriate, and I'm very proud of the city and their response on behalf of those that lost their lives as well as those that have been injured, and the recognition of the so many families that were impacted by this. I'm also thankful that President Joe Biden came to the city and shared in the mourning of the individuals impacted on that horrific day. I thought his comments were appropriate and touching, and that he visited the memorial. And I think his visit was appropriate as well. And we were very fortunate to receive the president, and I'm thankful to the president as well for the level one security designation for Mardi Gras. Obviously, I know that this mayor, and kudos to Mayor LaToya Cantrell, she's been advocating and lobbying for this since 2019, and I'm glad that the federal government finally recognized the necessity for that level relative to Mardi Gras. You know, sometimes there's a negative side to ask of this, but anybody that's been here really knows when you have, you know, a million people plus on the street at one time over a 6 mile span of geography. And in some cases, you have multiple parades in two different sections of the city. You know, that you can just double it up and say it's spanning 12 miles. There is some overlap if we want to get technical about it. But it's a challenge that you don't see anywhere else in the country. There's nothing exists like that. So I think, you know, the positives far outweigh what the appearances may be on a negative way, but whatever assets and resources the federal government and others are willing to share, and obviously in coordination with the state, we know that, you know, so many different governor administrations have taken very proactive roles down here for Mardi Gras. The LSP, Louisiana State Police, has always provided additional security. Surrounding agencies have provided help as well. And it really begs of coming together to be able to minimize as many risks as we possibly can for that event. And what I did like about Colin's comments with Tommy Tucker earlier was that, you know, we have to be very measured in our response as it relates to this terrorist action relative to Mardi Gras, and hopefully decisions that are made are based on data and not emotion, and understanding the very nature of Mardi Gras. We've always understood the challenges, and there is an assumption of risk for those that go out and enjoy Mardi Gras Day. And it's not unlike any other time. You're in public spaces with large amounts of people or otherwise. You never know what the challenge may be, and you never know what the response of everybody there may or may not be. So you have to be prepared. You have to be on guard, and you have to look out for your own best interests in those respects. And it's not like that we can go and celebrate together in public spaces and just forget about everything. That's not reality. So a lot of good things are coming out of this, and hopefully at some point we put this behind us, and things get back to normal, and we're able to execute and provide what we say that we're going to provide on a daily basis. When we come back, we will visit with Brian Lagarde with our NOLA Coalition segment, Executive Director of Project NOLA. We'll also visit with J.P. Morrell at 11:30, New Orleans City Council member at large, and we'll get his thoughts about what he's seeing at the present time. So stay with us. This is Newell on WWL.